This is Audible.
Stop people-pleasing. Be assertive. Stop caring what others think. Beat your guilt. And stop being a pushover. Written by Patrick King. Narrated by Steve Campbell. Chapter 1. The Fatal Need to Please. I once had a friend named Muriel. She worked at a large technology company. She was in a middle management position, which large technology companies can't seem to get enough of. Muriel was well-respected because she seemed to be selfless and often took the burden of the entire office on her shoulders. She gladly accepted any piece of work her manager had, even if there were other people who could have taken care of it. In fact, sometimes Muriel took jobs from supervisors other than their own. "Just trying to carry the load and help out," she'd say. Muriel had a habit of going above and beyond the call of duty. She worked hard to accommodate as many people as she knew. She'd take over presentations that cohorts were stuck on. She stayed late at least 2 nights a week. Maybe twice a month, she would go out for lunch and offer to bring back sandwiches for her entire unit. Most of the time, she didn't ask to be paid back. Her thinking was that she had to make herself an invaluable asset to the organization. This was particularly important to Muriel because she was terrified of being unemployed. She'd spent 22 months on unemployment, during which she thought nobody would ever hire her again. She figured that by working extra hard, other people in the office would consider her indispensable and could never replace her. But somewhere along the line, Muriel turned that obsession into subconscious obedience. Not only did she want to make everyone around her satisfied and happy, but she also became utterly petrified of rocking the boat in any way. Muriel worked in the marketing department. Her job was to suggest and execute product packaging design elements that made her company's product look attractive. She'd studied art and graphic design in college and fully believed in the less is more principle. That you shouldn't overload a given product package with too much clutter, extraneous information, or bad imagery. The market trends overwhelmingly agreed with her, and so did the sales data. Unfortunately, her managers loved all that stuff. They believed customers wanted to see every single piece of information they could possibly want right there on the box. Muriel knew this wasn't true and wanted to say something about it, but she didn't. She was afraid of rocking the boat in any way. She couldn't lose her job. So she simply nodded in assent at design meetings and supported their decision to clutter the package of their new product with unappealing imagery, thorough but unreadable information, and a lousy-looking cartoon mascot rabbit that had nothing to do with the company or the product. The product failed for more reasons than just the packaging, but it didn't help. Either way, Muriel thought that she'd done and worked hard enough to merit her staying in her job, because she'd striven to make everyone happy. But when layoffs started 2 months after the product died, Muriel was the first to be let go. She was mortified. She felt that she'd done everything right and made herself irreplaceable to the company. When she asked why, the human resources department said that she hadn't done enough to distinguish herself as a vital contributor to the company. She didn't seem to have any ideas to move the company forward and appeared to be content to just keep the office in order. Muriel descended into full-on panic mode. What had happened was the exact opposite of what she believed. Keep your head down, work hard, and you'll get properly rewarded. She wanted everyone she worked with to feel happy and supported, but she somehow got punished for it. What was the cause of Muriel's downfall? She was focused on pleasing others and gaining their approval, and put her actual job priority second. She wasn't doing what she was hired to do, and was only acting to prevent feelings of rejection. In hindsight, it's no surprise what happened to her. Muriel was, in short, a people pleaser, and a stark illustration of how self-defeating people pleasing can be. What is people pleasing? Generosity and friendliness are excellent qualities to possess. They help communication and cooperation between people. They're necessary in order for societies to get along, In almost every scenario, they beat the alternatives of selfishness and hostility. These are traits that are beaten into our heads from childhood, for good reason. But don't confuse people-pleasing as generosity and friendliness. They may appear identical from the outside, but what drives a generous person versus a people-pleaser couldn't be more different. A people-pleaser is kind to a fault, as you can see from Muriel's example. The drive for their kindness is not that it's just the right way to be, or that they want to enrich people's lives. Instead of coming from a secure desire to make the world a better place, people-pleasing stems from insecurity, fear, and shame. A people-pleaser is worried about rejection. They have a need, as we all do, to be accepted and treasured, to be loved. But in people-pleasers, this need is amplified to the extent that they will bend over backward just to not lose that love or acceptance. They are driven by avoiding negative consequences rather than creating positive possibilities. Additionally, they feel that they are always on the brink of rejection. So this urgency causes a type of panic that is categorized by doing anything possible. People-pleasing is a defensive act, whereas genuine concern and generosity are affirmative practices. The people-pleaser at the same time also seeks approval, because approval is the sign that there has been no rejection. This is why they will jump through hoops for a simple smile and thank you. These elements taken together create someone who feels that they must always be serving others in order to be accepted. Some specific impulses are detailed below. How familiar do they sound to you? People-pleasers are always cheerful in all situations, on the outside. A people-pleaser never complains about anything. They have no apparent negative feelings. They have a smile on their face every moment they're awake, at least when others are observing. They think they're doing so to make everyone around them feel happy, when in fact, their sunshiny behavior is probably making those people uneasy. They are more transparent than they realize, and being around someone who is obviously putting a false face on is off-putting and uncomfortable. At best, it seems dishonest. At worst, it's manipulative. People-pleasers never assert what they think, believe, or want, even if they are unhappy. With people-pleasers, it's all about everyone else. If they're going out with someone, they'll never recommend what to do or where to go. They'll never speak up if they're having a terrible time. They don't want to ever be the reason for unhappiness or dissatisfaction. They simply agree with the general statement of the group rather than risk rejection or being an outcast. They feel, whether accurately or not, that they are fine with everything. This allows resentment to build up little by little over time until they are a volcano waiting to erupt. People-pleasers promise to do everything for everyone, even if they hate it or are lying. People-pleasers are in the habit of offering the moon and the stars to their friends. They'll pledge to do things their friends don't want to do or things they know will delight their friends and earn a reaction of, "Thank you so much, you're the best." But people-pleasers don't necessarily plan on actually doing these things. They just say they will with the intent to gain temporary approval and make their friends happy. In reality, their continued promises and inaction just tick their friends off, as it becomes apparent that they are willing to be dishonest and only say what people want to hear. People-pleasers never ask for anything, even if they need it. The people-pleaser pretends to deny that their needs are important at all, and will therefore never request anything from someone else. They want to be seen as providing and unselfish. And even if a people-pleaser does muster up the nerve to actually ask for something, they'll give the person they're asking a million different reasons or opportunities to tell them no. They want to minimize the chances of inconveniencing or annoying others in the slightest. While they are talking about how selfless they are, the people-pleaser will grumble about their needs not being met or being addressed. So, what drives the people-pleaser to these seemingly dishonest and passive-aggressive behaviors? As mentioned, people pleasers are driven by a deep and piercing fear of rejection. They fear being spurned or deserted by others. And that fear plays a far bigger part in their people pleasing than real feelings of goodwill. If they give and give and give, they believe there's less of a chance that they'll be rejected or abandoned. They're not really doing what they do to improve someone else's life. They just want to feel more positive about themselves. However, that doesn't mean all people pleasers are secretly mean, horrible beasts that are only after their own needs. They can be sincerely considerate and nice. They can be truly concerned about the welfare of their family and friends. People pleasers just don't know what's really compelling them to please everyone. And they're very confused and mystified as to why, after all their efforts, they feel bitter, annoyed, or sad. Consider the following traits, emotions, or self-beliefs. If a few of them feel uncomfortably familiar to you, then you may be a people pleaser. You can't say no. You say yes, but actually mean no. You agree to something, but then fume quietly to yourself. You agree to do something, but get mad at whoever asked you to do it. You complain that too many of your friends and family take you for granted. You feel fatigued or worn out with people you have a hard time saying no to. You feel guilty about doing something you want to do. You expect others to perceive why you're unhappy without you having to tell them. You then get angry when they don't. You try to be what others desire you to be. You don't offer your opinions and generally just go with someone else's. You can't reveal your emotions when they're different from those of your friends or family. You back away from being upset. You have a difficult time standing up for yourself. You're not aggressive in doing what you need to do. You never say how you feel because you're afraid you'll cause unpleasantness. You feel that your expressions of love aren't mutual or being properly returned. You feel unappreciated for all the things you're doing for others. You feel upset, hostile, misunderstood, or duped. You feel unwanted, unloved, unvalued, or disregarded. You worry about troubling or irritating other people. You just want everyone to be peaceful, live in harmony, and never have a problem with anyone or anything else ever again. And maybe have a unicorn or a leprechaun on the side. No problem, right? What causes people-pleasing? Habits rarely develop in a vacuum, and people-pleasing is no exception. There are plenty of possible root causes for people-pleasing. A childhood is often pointed to as the origin, but whoever it was and whatever the circumstances, your tendencies toward people-pleasing are rooted in being disapproved of or rejected by someone from whom you seek validation. This could have been your parents, teachers, classmates, abusive partners, egotistical friends, or people who simply suck. Those negative responses, especially if they come in the form of physical or emotional abuse, keep compounding and adding to your poor self-esteem. That's the power of continual rejection. You will do everything in your power to prevent it, and that often takes the form of pleasing others. The way you can prove worth to yourself and others is to be servile and to accommodate everyone's wishes. Childhood roots of pleasing people. The most powerful and present influencers in any family, more than faith or cultural backgrounds, are the parents or guardians of the household. Parents are supposed to be the protectors, the forces that keep us from harm, damage, and despair. Children exchange seemingly unconditional love for their parents, or at the very least, depend on them for their security. Our childhood experiences with parents or other family authority figures color our attitudes and behaviors that emerge when we've grown up. Psychologist Hap Lacrone, specifically addressing the problem of people-pleasing, confirmed, "The problem often comes from long-held feelings and beliefs of inadequacy going back to childhood and adolescence. When the people-pleasers' attempts to please parents or caregivers were rejected, made conditional or otherwise unattainable. As such, a child understandably seeks praise and affirmation from their mother, father, or guardian. Centuries of evolution have cemented this impulse in us. Making our parents happy with us is a survival instinct. But when a child does something to irritate or anger them, a parent or guardian might express disapproval, possibly through punishment. We then understand their love as conditional. If we don't behave how our parents want, we sense they're rejecting us. We may perceive them as being emotionally unavailable or at best occasionally available. If we feel disapproved over and over throughout our childhood, we take on that disfavor ourselves. It becomes how we think we are. We internalize that disapproval as we are not enough and we are inadequate. In turn, it wreaks havoc on our confidence and self-esteem. After all, if the main figures in your life said you were a duck, you'd probably believe you were a duck. It's the same with our sense of confidence and self-esteem. Hearing a message often enough, especially during childhood when the brain resembles more of a sponge, can be damaging far into adulthood. Those messages shape how we view our other adult relationships. We allow friends, employers, and significant others, not ourselves, to decide how valuable we are. We ignore our own needs and work overtime for them, so they'll see us as valuable people they'd never think of rejecting. But the value we feel from this kind of behavior isn't real, and it's not something we can depend on over the long haul. You may enjoy seeing the barista from your local cafe, but take away his ability to make coffee, and what remains? Not much of an incentive to spend time with him. Codependency. This is another common cause for people-pleasing. Codependency is when you are excessively dependent on someone else, whether it be your spouse, significant other, or friend. We desperately care for them and seek their approval. However, we may harness a belief that love is conditional, only given to us if we meet all of someone's demands and behave as they want. We may fear abandonment or rejection, and to compensate, we try to get affection out of others by being good boys and girls. If we please someone over and over again, we figure they'd love and accept us for all that we do for them. All these actions and behaviors are symptoms of codependency, and it directly feeds into why some of us are relentless people pleasers. We fear letting them down and try everything we can to make them happy so they'll continue to like us. It's an understandable impulse, but it's also imbalanced and stressful. Agreeing to never disagree. This is a cause of people-pleasing that can slowly grow over time. People-pleasers dare not say anything that jeopardizes our safety and security. We always let the other person choose where to eat. We never challenge their viewpoints if we disagree with them, and we just go with the flow to avoid disruption or disagreement. After all, any disagreement is an opportunity for rejection. Further, we never know how unpleasant the retaliation or discomfort might be, so we avoid it altogether. Things we need or want become insignificant to whatever everybody else needs or wants. Instead of giving voice to our own concerns, we submit to those of others. Imagine a spouse whose partner has strong political convictions and goes out of their way to support and affirm them, even though their own views may be very different or even opposing. They're afraid that voicing their beliefs will cause an inscrutable rupture in their relationship. Very rarely is it an intentional act to mold someone's psyche in this way, yet the instinct to please is widespread and common. Get over it? Some people, most likely those who are affecting us this way, might say all talk of problems we've had in the past, especially childhood, is an excuse. How long have you had to get over it? Why don't you just let this go? They probably won't get how ironic that insistence sounds, since it's another form of rejection. But to answer their question, not only can't you get over it quickly, but you also really don't have a choice. Repeated traumas and mistreatment especially have long-lasting effects that don't go away the minute they stop. In his book, The Divided Mind, John Sarno explains, Feelings experienced in the unconscious at any time in a person's life, including childhood, are permanent. Anger, hurt, emotional pain, and sadness generated in the childhood will stay with you all your life. These deep-seated issues always manifest in our relationships. We subconsciously find partners, friends, or associates who amplify our deepest traits and flaws. And we reenact our experience in some way in the context of those relationships. In the case of people pleasers, we give other people the reins of power and immediately place ourselves as their subordinates. This isn't to say one can't learn to live and thrive with these memories or influences, but it's almost impossible to forget them, which seems to be what our unsympathetic friends insist we do. That's unrealistic. The spotlight effect. Human beings tend to dwell under a certain illusion that they're being watched by everyone else. Living under the limitations of our own viewpoint, we tend to think everyone in our circle is looking at and judging how we look and behave. This is known as the spotlight effect. And it's an inflated sense of self that can cause several ill effects in our lives and relationships. We're afraid to go dancing because we think everyone will see what bad dancers we are. The spotlight effect is a mental distortion that causes us to feel foolish and ashamed on a daily basis. We're positive everyone's looking and cataloging our every action and reaction, and are quietly ridiculing, lamenting, or mocking us. This makes us overmodulate our behavior or even recede from the public altogether to avoid further perceived embarrassment. But the spotlight effect is almost totally imaginary. For one thing, it's not scalable. If everyone is preoccupied with their own needs and interests, then there's really no possible way they could be spending their energies on the twists and turns of another person's life. At most, maybe a couple of people are paying attention to most of your moves. And they're likely people you're already close to, who are supposed to know you better than anyone else. And even they have their own matters to concentrate on. Unless you're a public figure, a rock star, a social media star, or anyone else with high visibility, the eyes of the world are most likely not trained to study everything you do and say. Even if you are a public figure, your estimation of how much the world is watching you may be greatly distorted. The spotlight effect can still be a problem, and it greatly worsens the plight of the people pleasers. They already feel concerned that they may fall short of others' expectations. But if they're also suffering from the spotlight effect, those feelings are amplified and multiplied because they believe their every move and mistake is being noted by everyone else. They're even more flustered and motivated to right every wrong, bend over backward, and avoid any slight hint of disapproval or rejection. Their concern turns into full-on panic. They feel if they don't fix a problem fast, they'll be spurned by an entire group. To battle the spotlight effect, you need to take the big step outside yourself to gauge if other people really are taking notice of you. Concentrate on and observe other people's reactions to what you're doing. One thing this will do is give you a break from your own internal nervousness. That alone takes care of a significant part of the problem. It will also likely show you that far fewer people are focused on your every move than you think. Why you shouldn't be a people pleaser. Being under a constant directive to please everyone you can impacts you and your emotional health in several adverse ways. Self-neglect. When you're so consumed with the perceived needs of others, you're not paying yourself any attention. You could be overlooking or ignoring things you need to do to take care of yourself. This could include anything from exercise and stress management to paying bills and just having fun. Maybe you've made social plans after work with friends you haven't seen for a while, but you find yourself working long into the early evening to fix a problem that could have waited until the next day. Or you find yourself skipping a workout to deal with a family issue that's not really an emergency for you. These are not just mental or emotional problems. They can easily turn into physical health issues. You must be able to equalize your needs with those of other people and strike a fair balance between the two. Suppression, resentment, and passive aggression. putting yourself in a subservient position to everyone else, will naturally make you build up anger and bitterness with the people in your life. After spending so much time placating others, this resentment can leak out in the form of cutting remarks or scornful quips. Such passive aggression is never beneficial to relationships and can cause severe damage over time. A people pleaser must always cultivate a spirit of giving and selflessness, which is going to stuff more difficult feelings like anger, anguish, and anxiety deeper and deeper inside you. Make no mistake, if these negative emotions don't get acknowledged and addressed for a long period of time, they're going to come out in fierce, possibly violent ways. You could experience a total emotional and mental collapse and potentially a physical breakdown as well. Consider a submissive spouse who spends too much time working on their partner's needs and has to shelve their plans and goals to do so. Over time, the spouse might have to deal with a slow-burning anger over never being able to do what they really want. And after a few months of quiet simmering, it all comes out in an unforeseen rage against their partner. Inability to enjoy life. If you're always worried about everything you need to do for others, of course you'll be less able to take pleasure in anything life has to offer. How can you focus on your own happiness when you're so concerned about being responsible for the happiness of others? You'll be too mentally and physically exhausted to enjoy a good meal, a weekend road trip, or your child's Little League game. And this could result in a real bit of the spotlight effect. Your friends and relations will be able to read your dissatisfaction all over your face. This can have a huge effect on our children. What are you teaching your kids when you're merely showing up for them, but appear completely detached and disconnected? Stress and depression. The very definition of stress is having more requests and needs than you can manage. When you're trying to please everybody you meet, the number of demands on your time certainly grows with no end in sight. The stress of these unmet demands soon slides into full-on depression, and you can get stuck in a cycle that's very difficult to escape. Your to-do list never gets shorter, and it keeps getting filled with things for other people. When a people pleaser is struggling to meet all the demands they imagine are placed upon them, the level of stress goes off the charts just from the amount of work they put themselves through. When they've exhausted themselves making life better for others, but haven't experienced any prosperity of their own, that can cause a deep depression that only stops when they start a new round of people-pleasing. That's how this cycle works. Exploitation. If you become known as a people-pleaser, you're also opening yourself up to being taken advantage of. More people will think you're willing to do anything for them, and they may start piling on more requests than it's fair for you to handle. Selfish and exploitive people will capitalize on your weaknesses without a second thought. Even people who aren't so mean-spirited won't know when you're overburdened and will expect things from you that you simply can't deliver. This is particularly acute in the workplace. For instance, a senior executive who's more concerned about profits might place an unreasonable amount of work on your plate that you execute without obvious complaint. Then one of your peers, who's a generally amiable sort, sees how effectively and loyally you complete all kinds of tasks, and they start considering you the go-to person for all sorts of things. They have no idea you're being exploited and spending nights at the office simply because you don't give off the impression you feel that way. The need to control. The myth about people-pleasing is that it's an act of selflessness and sacrifice. But in reality, it's much more selfish. In trying to do everything for everybody, you're trying to manipulate other people's opinions, feelings, and reactions toward you from emotional debt. You're really trying to exert control over their lives and situations in a sneaky and underhanded way. At the root of it all, we please and serve because we want a certain outcome from people. We want there to be a wellspring of emotional debt that keeps us in people's good graces or orbit. You can imagine how this can easily turn manipulative. Over time, this impulse develops into a need, and you become a control freak. I've seen this happen at family Thanksgiving dinners, where the cook in charge, traditionally, frankly, the mother, lords over every single duty in the kitchen, despite offers from other guests to help out in some way. The people-pleasing mother has done everything for everyone in such an intense fashion that she believes nobody else will get it right. So she does all the work, eats at the table with droopy eyes for 10 minutes, and then goes straight up to work on the pumpkin pie and post-meal cleanup. Nobody knows the real you. People-pleasers have an image to maintain, and that comes at a cost. You shield and conceal your feelings to the point that people don't know who you truly are. They only know your people-pleasing disguise. Your desire to be well-liked and cherished by everyone, ironically, makes you more alone and detached, and maybe inauthentic as well. If the real you eventually comes out, it could be far uglier than you'd like. You might fear getting inebriated because you'd be more likely to reveal all your private thoughts and viewpoints, particularly disparaging comments about the people you've been trying to please all the time. Whereas if you were more honest and forthright before, your complaints could have been more diplomatically expressed and maybe solved ahead of time. People-pleasing is not the same as generosity or goodwill. It's not something you do because you have true interest in the betterment of mankind or concern for your loved ones. Rather, people-pleasing is a manifestation of unhealthy gaps in our emotional lives and the need to satisfy the ego. Being able to tell the difference between such counterfeit kindness and genuine compassion is easier than you might think. And found-out people-pleasers aren't regarded highly. More importantly, they don't regard themselves highly enough. But even with all the solid arguments against people-pleasing, it's something we still do. To stop that, we need to figure out what forces are behind people-pleasing, where we get the belief that we need to do it. That's what we'll talk about in the next chapter. Takeaways. The need to please others may appear to be generous and selfless, but it is one of the most selfish ways of behavior. People-pleasing is born out of fear, insecurity, and a need for approval. It is predicated on the sad belief that you are not enough, and that you thus need to increase your value by catering to people's needs and desires. The origins of people-pleasing instincts can come from a variety of sources, but the dynamic is always the same. You sought approval, were denied, and had to prove yourself in another way. You were gradually taught through experience that you received better outcomes when you served and placated people, so that became your natural state of being. This compulsion is further compounded by the spotlight effect, in which we have the distorted belief that everyone is constantly watching us and picking us apart. This is detrimental for normal people, but it's even worse for people-pleasers because its drive takes their insecurity to new levels, which causes a host of detrimental behaviors. Make no mistake about it, people-pleasing is harmful. You may get the approval you seek on a short-term basis, but it will be fleeting and fake. Then you will have to deal with the consequences, for instance, repression and suppression leaking out in passive-aggressive behavior, finally exploding like a volcano, or generally compromised happiness and health because of the overwhelming number of tasks you give yourself. Finally, you might end up with skewed relationships because you are putting yourself in a subordinate role and constantly putting on a face. Chapter 2. The Origins and Causes of People-Pleasing. You see someone cut in line ahead of you. You know it's not right. You understand you're perfectly entitled to remind the person where the back of the line is. But the thought of speaking up causes a rising tension within you, tying your stomach in knots and forming a lump in your throat. You can't bring yourself to do it. You decide that it's better to let the occasion slide without ruffling any feathers. With that decision, you feel the tension within you subside, your stomach relax, and your throat unclog. Ah, that's better. If you're a people pleaser or someone who constantly feels like you can't assert yourself, the sensations described above might be all too familiar. You feel them every time you want to say no to others' requests, or have feelings and opinions that run counter to what people expect you to have, or are faced with a situation that needs you to prioritize or assert yourself in some way. But while you may be familiar with the scene that plays out during such occasions, how well do you know the behind-the-scenes of the script you're continually running? Have you considered peeking behind the curtain at the origins and causes of such tendencies to please others and refrain from asserting yourself? What might be the reasons you feel such overwhelming tensions and negative emotions whenever you're in a situation where you need to stand up for yourself, say no, and refuse others? This chapter will be all about looking into those origins, causes, and reasons, the underlying mechanisms that continue to drive people-pleasing and non-assertive behaviors, even when they're proving destructive to individuals. While popular psychology might simply pin down the origins of such behaviors to childhood traumas, the real story is a more complicated cornucopia of psychological insecurities, distorted beliefs, and irrational fears. They might have involved childhood experiences, but are typically ongoing thinking patterns shaped by the current environment or cultivated by the individual themselves. Consider the case of Jackie. Growing up as the eldest of four siblings in a fatherless home, Jackie learned responsibility early in her life. From a young age, she became very good at sensing what others need and want, even though they don't say it, and she has made it her personal mission to see to it that those needs and wants are fulfilled. She helped her mother with household chores, worked while studying, and served as the second mother to her younger siblings. This pattern of behavior eventually permeated into her friendships, work relationships, and romantic attachments too. She took pride in being the first person everyone calls, if they need help, a stand-in, or just someone to listen to them. She considered a lack of time for herself as somewhat of a badge of honor, an indication of her selflessness and devotion to everyone around her. Now a 45 mother of two, Jackie still staunchly believes that being a worthy wife, a reliable mother, and an overall good person means always putting others first. She holds a full-time job while also taking care of everything in the household, feeling shame every time she feels like needing help from her husband or kids when it comes to household chores. She believes that as the mother of the home, she's responsible for everything from keeping the grocery list updated to keeping everyone happy and contented. She feels guilty about taking any time for herself to exercise, get regular health checkups, have a good time with her friends, or just unwind by herself. Because she's aware of the ever-growing list of things to do and commitments she can't just blow off without seeming like an irresponsible person. Eventually, Jackie begins to more frequently suffer from an assortment of physical ailments, from the common cold to migraines to stress ulcers. And even so, she feels guilty about getting sick, because then she's incapacitated from fulfilling her proclaimed purpose, which is to take care of others, instead of having to be taken care of. For people like Jackie, the real problem isn't their people-pleasing behaviors. Such behaviors are merely the visible manifestation of deeper issues, like skin bruises that show up as a consequence of the tissue trauma beneath them. In other words, people-pleasing is a symptom rather than the cause. Several causes may underline people-pleasing behaviors. Four in particular tend to rear their heads repeatedly. First, for some, there is the distorted belief that serving others is natural, and that looking out for oneself comes last. Relationships are all about serving, and the more one-sided, the better. Over time, they may have generalized such a tendency to subordinate themselves to everyone else they meet in their lives. If you possess this belief, it's easy to see how extreme guilt would prevent you from doing otherwise. Secondly, many people-pleasers suffer from self-worth issues. They feel a sense of self-worth and a chance for acceptance only if they say yes to everything asked of them. Third, many of those who are eager to please equate pleasing people with kindness and being good. Conversely, they equate saying no and self-assertion with harshness and being bad. This mindset makes them vulnerable to being taken advantage of, as they do everything they can to preserve that image of always being good. And fourth, many people pleasers behave the way they do because they fear confrontation. They would rather bite their tongue until they bleed than say anything to rock the boat, ultimately building a life full of resentment and unexpressed emotions. These four specific causes of the so-called disease to please are what this chapter is focused on discussing. If your personal and professional relationships have been infected by this disease, it's important for you to understand its origins and the context of your own experience and your own psyche. When you understand why you behave the way you do, you are in a better position to know how to free yourself of this people-pleasing tendency. You will know the mindsets you need to catch in yourself and change, as well as the specific solutions and actionable steps that will work best in your situation. So to better equip yourself in the next stages of kicking this self-destructive habit, first take some time to learn all about the following specific causes of people-pleasing. The need to please and serve. From the time you were a kid, you are likely to have been taught that being considerate of others is always more admirable than putting yourself first. You were praised for being generous enough to share the pack of cookies with your sibling or give that other kid a chance to play on the swing after you've had some time on it. On the other hand, you were admonished for every time you refused to share or stand aside for the sake of others. While there are certainly important values ingrained in such teachings and experiences, for example, those of generosity and compassion, they are typically taught with such one-sided vigor that you're likely to have developed a distorted belief that you're never allowed to put yourself first. You have grown to believe that you should always preserve and put others first instead, to the point that doing things for yourself brings about intense feelings of guilt on your part. Never mind that such things are actually expected or even necessary for your personal well-being. You've simply been conditioned to think that doing those things for yourself is cause enough for scorn and self-reproach. You find yourself needing to please and serve others instead of avoid feeling the guilt that comes with prioritizing yourself. If you have thus grown to believe that your purpose is to please others, you would naturally think that standing up for yourself and refusing others simply go against your core values. You expect yourself to uphold generosity and kindness by always pleasing others. So, when you do upset or displease someone by prioritizing yourself, you feel immense guilt. Guilt that you take as a sign that you violated some significant moral code. You consider that huge guilt as a reminder that refusing others and prioritizing yourself must be bad, and that you should therefore just stick to putting others first all the time. For example, Dave is a hard-working, humble manager who is always ready to take the fall for any of his team members. He thinks that because he's a leader, everyone else on his team is his responsibility, even to the point that he would end up doing the tasks he delegated to them if they failed to do so. He believes that he's expected to be the all-around person for every task and glitch, and feels huge guilt if he fails to cater to the needs or solve the problems of his every member. He doesn't confront any of his subordinates about poor output or even misbehaviors, because he fears that if he does so, they might feel bad, lose confidence, or turn against him. Instead, he doubles his own efforts just to cover for every mistake and please everyone on his team, even if it means sacrificing his personal or family time. Convinced that putting everyone else first is part of his duty as a leader, Dave is filled with guilt at the thought of taking any time to prioritize himself over his team members. So, in addition to feeling guilty about putting yourself first, the intense need to please and serve others also derives from a feeling of responsibility for others' emotions and reactions. If refusing to grant a favor causes a friend to feel bad or neglected, you feel that's on you. You feel answerable for every disheartened expression or disappointed look, because you believe you had the power to avert that if only you succumbed to what they wanted. And because you feel responsible for everybody else's happiness and mental health, You are willing to sacrifice your own just to save everyone else from feeling bad or troubled. You become overly eager to do what it takes to keep everyone happy, believing that such is a sign that you're taking the best care of your relationships with others. The problem with having this kind of mentality is that it reflects a skewed view of what healthy, satisfying relationships are all about. Healthy relationships involve a certain degree of give and take, a balance between considering others' needs and seeing to it that you don't neglect your own. Serving others and wanting happiness for the people in your life are reasonable, worthy desires, but not at the expense of your own health and happiness. Insecurity and feelings of worthlessness. Another major cause of people-pleasing is a deep-seated sense of insecurity and worthlessness. When you have so many insecurities and think little of yourself, you feel that you should expect to be rejected any time, and you often feel that you deserve it. You can't think of any reason for people to be interested in you, much less approve of you or love you. Deep down, you're convinced that you're not enough as you are and that you're not worthy of love. And this leads you to always being on your guard for imminent rejection. You become overly sensitive to any cues that may signal such rejection, and that includes any frown or offhanded remark of disappointment from people you try to refuse. Such anticipation and fear of rejection drive you to people-pleasing, as you come to believe that you gain worth as a person only when you please or serve others as they wish. You have never believed that people can like you for you, and you end up feeling the need to stretch yourself by pleasing or serving others in order to gain approval and love. You do whatever it takes to avoid others' displeasure and rejection, because with your frail sense of self-worth, that rejection may very well equal the destruction of your very sense of self. Take, for instance, Helen, a woman who spent her childhood and teenage years trying to win the approval and unconditional love of a mother who doled out affection only when Helen showed obedient or submissive behavior. Now a wife and mother herself, Helen is still unconsciously repeating the same relationship pattern with the people in her life. She believes her husband is doing her a favor by just staying with her, and she fears that her children might discover she's not a good enough mother for them. To compensate for her insecurity and feelings of worthlessness, she gives them all of her time and service, while disregarding her own needs. She considers herself worth their love only so far as they are pleased with how she behaves. Feeling unworthy of love isn't something many people readily admit to. Sometimes it's even something completely unconscious, like an invisible but deep wound you don't know you have, but still keeps hurting you enough to drive many of your behaviors. Yes, including people-pleasing. Maybe you acknowledged it long before you even hit puberty. Or maybe you managed to convince yourself you're no good compared to a sibling your parents have always favored over you. Or to your popular friend who always gets awarded all the stars. You've come to see yourself as unworthy of acceptance and love. For why would people waste their time and emotional energy loving you when there are so many others better than you? In your core, you believe that no, you're not worthy of any love freely and unconditionally given to you. But somewhere along the way, you've stumbled upon this idea. You may not be worthy of that love as you are, but maybe there is a way for you to win that love by always trying to be more. To give more, to serve more. And so you've fallen into the habit of pleasing and serving others to the best of your ability in the hopes of gaining that love despite feeling unworthy of it. You see people pleasing as the solution, the healing elixir for those deep wounds of insecurity and sense of worthlessness you've been nursing. Equating people pleasing with goodness and self-assertion with badness. The importance of being a good person is often a central lesson taught at home and in school, right from the earliest days of molding a child. When you're a child, this is likely among the first pieces of advice mommy or daddy gave you. Those three key words are often used interchangeably too, Nice equals kind equals good. So much so that you come to think of this domain of behavior as black and white. You believe that you must always be nice in order to be a good person, and anything that taints such an image of niceness, for example, refusing to grant a favor or calling out someone for stepping on your rights, makes you a bad person. There isn't necessarily guilt involved here, as with the need to serve others. But this is merely a highly skewed perspective of how relationships should work. Such a mentality of equating being nice with being a good person and asserting oneself with being a bad person is enough to produce people-pleasing behaviors in anyone. But those especially prone to being hardcore people-pleasers with respect to this cause are those who consider it very important that they are seen as good people by everyone, all the time. If it matters to you a lot that you are perceived by people as nice and good, you'll surely be ready to sacrifice inordinate amounts of time and effort catering to everyone's needs and wants. You don't want a single person in your life unhappy about how you behaved, because it takes only one slip-up on your part to shatter the immaculate nice person image you've been trying to protect. The result? Heights of people-pleasing behavior and non-assertion. For example, Bob has always prided himself on being a nice person and a good friend. He feels that these qualities are what define him as a person, and he does whatever it takes to live up to that image. Asked by a friend for a huge loan, he obliges, even though he knows that his budget can't reasonably bear to do so. He believes that saying no makes him a bad friend, and ultimately a bad person, and he doesn't want that. So Bob does what it takes to avoid being that bad person and to try to remain a good friend. He lends his friend an amount he can't afford to lose. To offset that amount, he sidesteps several necessary expenditures of a couple of months, accumulating late fees and interest he now needs to pay off on his own. He suffers the consequences out of fear that refusing his friend's request makes him a bad person. Wanting to be a good person, and even wanting to be seen as someone who is nice, are not dishonorable desires. But the idea that you can't assert yourself and at the same time be a good or nice person is a skewed notion. It's perfectly acceptable to be assertive as required by the situation, and it wouldn't make you any less of a good person for doing so. In the same way, the idea that being selfless all the time necessarily makes you a good person is also a distorted view. Selflessness, as noble as it may appear, can become a vice if you indiscriminately use it not out of genuine concern for others, but out of a need to protect an image people can admire. On the other side of the coin is selfishness, which, despite its negative connotations, is actually a concept worth relearning and practicing in regulated measures. Understood in a different light and applied under the right circumstances, selfishness can be good. This good kind of selfishness is one that's necessary, a centering upon yourself in order to maintain your health and replenish your energy before you give of yourself to others, and to prevent spreading yourself too thinly by catering to everyone else's demands. For the sake of your own health, happiness, and dreams, you need to practice this kind of selfishness without feeling guilty that you might be taking anything away from others. As a matter of fact, it's by allowing yourself to be selfish at times that you can ensure that you'll be able to look out for others and share the happiness you feel for them more fully. Fear of confrontation. Finally, people-pleasing may also arise from a fear of confrontation. When you're afraid to rock the boat, you will be content with going along with what everyone else wants, feel pressured to accept every request, and never dare to say no or stand up for yourself. This composite of tendencies and behaviors give rise to a single pattern: people-pleasing. Since you're perpetually afraid to be direct with people with regard to your own opinions, feelings, wants, and needs, you're likely to be reduced to becoming a pushover or a doormat. What's more, you may not always be aware that it's this fear of confrontation that leads you to behave in such ways. While people-pleasing may thus be rooted in a fear of confrontation, that fear of confrontation may be in turn rooted in even more basic origins. You may be afraid to confront people with what you really want because you're afraid that you might not be heard anyway. You might be anxious that trying to stand up for yourself may only find you humiliated in the end, should you fail to win that argument for your rights to be respected. You may dread that confrontation might lead you to lose a job, a relationship, or your good reputation. You may be apprehensive that confrontation will force ugly, unimaginable emotions to arise, guilt, anger, and disgust, to name a few, both in yourself and in those you confront. The bottom line is that you're afraid that confrontation will only make things worse and that you won't be able to handle that either. So, to prevent things from getting worse, you have a solution. You avoid speaking up, saying no, or confronting anyone altogether, and simply take what you believe is the path of least resistance. If it happens to be an inaction, so be it. Your solution, in other words, is to become a people pleaser. For example, consider what you'll do in a workplace